Hello, dear listeners. Do you ever wonder why we use certain phrases or words? What are the origins? Where did they come from? You know, those funny sayings we use in everyday life, like wolf in sheep's clothing, or push the envelope, when pigs fly, or knock on wood. Well, do we have an amazing new podcast for you to check out. Why Do We Say That podcast is hosted by amazing and fun father-son duo Scott and Liam Kelly, and they check out all these sayings and ponder all those questions and dive deep into why we say that and where they come from. It's really freaking awesome. I've been enjoying it so much, and I really love to bring you guys new podcasts that you can listen to. It's really fun when you get something like a really good, strong father and son dynamic on a podcast, and they have a lot of fun. So definitely check them out. You can find them on Apple Podcasts under Why Do We Say That from Scott and Liam, and we will have the links in the show notes as well. And now, guys, back to the show. The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jermaine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was
mature themes.
Her husband wants her need satisfied and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is Bea Jermaine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where my co-host Super Marcy and I do a retrospective series on Masters of Horror, and as well as other anthology film and TV shows. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only Super Marcy. Hello Marcy, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. I'm a little bit loopy as we're recording, but that's awesome because it kind of goes with what we'll be talking about today for our bonus episode, which we will do every so often, and I'm very excited.
Indeed. Like, for our listeners out there of Podcasters of Horror, this is a bit of a change of pace because we're not talking about anything Masters of Horror or Mick Garris anthology horror related. We decided, since we've talked about in the past that at some point, like once we sort of finish up also Masters of Horror, Fear Itself, and then eventually the film Nightmare Cinema, we're going to move on to talk about other anthology film and TV horror shows. So we thought, like, what would be a good idea to kind of give a bit of a taste for our listeners out there is we're going to dedicate this episode to talking about one particular series that I know that all of us grew up on, which, of course, is the TV show Goosebumps, which was, of course, based on the book series by R.L. Stine. And they made a TV show that ran from 1995 to 1998.
Yes. There was, what, like 4 or 5 seasons of the show or something?
I believe so, yeah.
But we're not alone for this bonus episode, are we?
Definitely not, because we have two very special guests who are joining us to talk about all things Goosebumps. And they are, of course, legends of the podcast because they have been on our podcast so many times over the years. And both of them have been on recently as well. And so let us welcome back Amy Hackery and Beatrix Harper. Hello, Amy and Bea. How are you?
Yes.
I was trying to be all cordial and be like, oh no, B has to go first. I am doing fine. Podcasters beware, you're in for a scare.
Oh, God. Indeed.
Love it.
Yes. But yes, all four of us are here to talk about all things Goosebumps. But I think how are we going to do this episode? What we have done is we decided to go back through the series and decided that each of us picks one episode that they want to talk about for the show, and we discuss it together as a group and sort of talk about sort of the what worked, what didn't, and why we enjoyed the series so much. And yeah, so we have quite an interesting array of episodes to discuss. But I guess before we do, and I'm going to ask this for all three of you, but I will do it individually, of course, before we get started. Marcy, what is your relationship with Goosebumps, like both the books and also the TV show?
Yeah, well, when Goosebumps like first came out, or not maybe not when it first came out, but at least, I don't know, I was younger. I think I read a few of the books and, yeah, I thought they were pretty cool. I liked that. I saw the odd episode of the show, but I must have thought because R.L. Stein had, like, something that was more focused to teens, I was like, nah, this Goosebumps stuff is too young for me. I'm going to go to Fear Street and I'm going to be cool. So apparently that's how my young mind worked. So I was very much more on the Fear Street side of things. I can't even remember. I read so many of those books. But it was when they made the film with Jack Black a few years ago. And I was like, oh, this looks really awesome. Yeah, definitely have to check it out. And I thought, you know what? I think my niece Lily is old enough to check this movie out. So I took her to the movies to see it, and we both had such a good time. She absolutely loved it. We went and saw the sequel as well together, which I think was not as good, but it's still a fairly entertaining film. But it sort of got both of us, like, as she got a little bit older, she started reading the Goosebumps books, and I went and bought out a whole bunch of them and started reading them, and they're really just easy, entertaining little reads. It's a lot of fun, and I think I pretty much like binged watched all the show when it was still on Netflix in Australia, and I just had so much fun. It was just silly, and I really enjoyed it. And I think it's good to see like the almost resurgence of like R.L. Stein stuff within the last, you know, what, 7 years or so. It's been awesome.
Oh, indeed. And Amy, what about yourself? What is your relationship with Goosebumps?
Oh, I was a diehard Goosebumps fan. Not from the start. I came into it probably around maybe a dozen or so books into the series, because I remember the first one I got was The Haunted Mask, and I was on vacation with my parents, and it was like, oh, that looks like a cool book. And I remember not even joking, being so scared by the book, I wanted to leave it in the hotel room behind us. It was some cursed object. It's like, no, I have to get this out of my life, like the fucking Night of the Demon or whatever. but after that, I was absolutely hooked once I started reading, you know, more of the books. And I watched most of the TV show. I kind of petered out of the TV show right around the same time, the book series. The first one was coming to an end because they switched over from Goosebumps to Goosebumps Series 2000. And I think I got the first one of that. And by that time it was around 98. And I was like, yeah, I'm a little too old for this. And then I did kind of move on to reading the Fear Street books. And that's just when I started getting more interested in movies. Period. So I had something else to occupy my time, but I always, you know, still had great affection for the books. And then probably around 13 years ago or so, I was in Walmart one day and I saw there was a new Goosebumps series out, and it was Scream of the Haunted Mask was the book, and it was Goosebumps Horrorland was the name of the series, and I was like, oh, interesting. And so I picked it up, and it really was like putting on an old sweater that you haven't worn forever, but it still fits perfectly. It was cheesy, but it still brought those memories of just being under the covers, reading the books, just devouring any Goosebumps related media that I could. And so, yeah, I was into it, then kind of got out of it when I was, you know, thought I was getting too old. But then when I was older, I rediscovered it again. I was like, yeah, this is pretty darn rad. It's cheesy, but it's rad.
Mm, definitely. Definitely.
And what about yourself, B?
My relationship with Goosebumps? Well, I blew Slappy once.
That makes sense. I can believe that.
Well, you asked. Seriously. Anyway, like Amy Doll, my relationship with Goosebumps spans back, you know, so many years. I was basically in that prime age that was very much given to the Goosebumps stories. So I was definitely in the target audience. And the very first book that my lovely mother bought from the Scholastic Book Fair, God, I love those, was The Werewolf of Fever Swamp. And took it home. I read it over the course of about an hour or so. And I just, this is going to sound very cheesy, but we're talking about Goosebumps, so, and Goosebumps is cheesy, but, you know, I fell in love. And the thing is, I never really had much of a stomach for horror previously to that. Not in such a formal way. So for me, Goosebumps was more or less a very good way to sort of like very gently introduce me into horror without completely traumatizing me. now as time went on, just like with what you folks have all already said, you know, you kind of grow out of it because you're starting to explore brand new avenues when it comes to getting your horror fix, and, you know, your mind and your body is starting to mature and you start to leave behind aspects of your childhood. But I think the point is, going back to it, you know, going back to see these movies and just having these fond memories, I think it could also be the result of some sort of adulthood trauma, and we're trying to regress back to a simpler age.
100%
wrong. But also another very quick and funny story. About a decade or so ago, I went to Mullaney, a very, very beautiful little rural town in out of Brisbane, and I came into a bookstore. Now, previously, my mother made me sell my Goosebumps books. I know. So anyway, I went to the store and I saw this copy of Vampire's Breath, and I picked it up. I looked inside the cover, and there was my name. I had labeled this book when I was in primary school.
No way. Somehow,
it found its way into Mullaney, and I found it again. So I bought it.
That's the universe, wow, like, bringing that book back to you, B.
Yes. That is cool.
It is very cool. I still have it, and I'm not going to let it go.
Wow.
I'm stunned. That, like, you hear about things like that happening. Mm-hmm. But you don't think they actually happen.
And yet when they do, it's like, oh my goodness. It almost feels like a miracle of sorts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm glad you had that experience, because mine was kind of, my books met a sadder end, because I know they all got like packed up and like shoved in the attic. And then after I kind of started getting back into Goosebumps, like, oh, I wonder if those books are still up there. And then I went up and like that entire box was like, damage from like water and just years, so it's like all of them were totally warped, and it's like, well, shit.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah,
that's really sad.
But going back to what you were saying about like it being a gateway to, you know, kind of like the gateway drug to horror, as it were, those books did such a great job of sucking you in from their covers. One, because of the Tim Jacobus art is like, you cannot overstate how important that was. Like, you just fell in love with every cover.
Definitely.
But then also, like, all the books came in like these crazy color schemes for like the banner and like the Goosebumps logo. There was all these bold, bright colors. So there was this element of horror in there. It's like, oh, they're scary in here. But there's also that kind of element of cheesiness where it's like, you pick up on as a kid where you're like, it's going to be scary, but it's not going to be like traumatizing scary or something that's going to send you like fleeing from your house. Like,
that's exactly right.
It's, yeah, totally the same.
that's like the opposite to Stephen Gamble's work to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Anybody who's read that series knows about those infamous illustrations. Brilliant, but holy fucking shit. When you are a child, you know, that sort of thing just burrows its way into your skull and you never, ever forget it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I guess for me, my relationship with Goosebumps as a whole, I remembered as a kid, because this was at around that time I was not in the horror at all.
Because you're a pussy kid. No, I'm kidding.
Shut up. But I wasn't in the horror at all, but I do remember the books being hugely popular, like, while I was in school. Like, everyone I knew was reading them. And I wasn't interested in them at the time until one day while we were in class. I think this was, like, during a free period. One of my teachers decided, like, well, you know, just to sort of pass the time, I'm going to read you one of these Goosebumps books to all of you.
Because as you do.
And the book in particular, which for me has, like, the scariest cover out of all of them, is The Horror at Camp Jelly Jam.
Oh, God, yeah.
That cover, like, that, even to this day, that cover for that book still gives me chills. Because it's just, like, just a guy having, like, the weirdest face on it, and it just freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah, it's not even a monster, it's just some guy.
Yeah, and he's just, like, got the creepiest, like, I guess it's a smile? I don't know, but it's freaky.
It's like a rictus grin, that's what it is. It's like rigor mortis is setting in, that's what it reminds me of.
Exactly. Like
he's a counselor at Camp Sardonicus.
Exactly. But I was definitely intrigued by what I heard from the book. And I mean, it was creepy, at least for me at the time. And I thought, you know what, I might get some of these books. I did manage to get quite a few. I only read a couple of them because, like, I wasn't a huge reader at the time. And it would take me quite a bit to, like, read most of the books.
Nothing's changed.
Shut up. But, I see. You're so mean. But I do remember the TV show because even though I only read a couple of the books at the time, like when the TV show was announced, I was absolutely excited for it, like just to watch it. And that was probably like, I guess, my real big first taste of horror was through the Goosebumps TV show.
Mm.
So... yeah, so I have a lot of fond memories of the TV show, so, and I'm looking forward to kind of just really sitting down and talking about it and kind of watching these episodes again. Was a lot of fun, especially when the legendary opening theme music kicked in.
No, it was deeper, so.
Which was done by Jack Lenz, who composed the theme music for the show. And it's a very memorable opening because it just shows random images like that have nothing to do with anything that goes on with the show. It's just like a guy walks along with a brief, which what I'm assuming is R.L. Stein. Like it's,
I would assume it is, and the pages are the books, right?
Exactly. And then the book, like then his briefcase opens up and the pages fall out and a giant G comes out and it floats across town and it goes past a billboard that just makes like a woman who's happy look very sad the next, which I thought, I always find hilarious. It's like she's not like she's just like just looks like she's just having a really shitty day and is like really
yeah.
And then of course the famous part of it is when it goes past the dog and the dog has like green eyes start glowing
and the dog's just like ruff, 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 ruff.
In time to the music, so it's like do 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 do, but you hear the.
I don't know why it's making me laugh so much.
It literally is the Jingle Bell Dogs of Goosebumps.
Yes.
You know, it really makes you wonder, you know, what was Lenz thinking when he composed the theme? Like, what was he going for? What was the brief that he received?
I just like the fact that it's got that sort of like dun-dun-dun-dun, that creepy kind of jingle to it, but it also has New Jack Swing underneath it as well. Because you expect like somebody like like Bobby Brown or Michael Jackson or Vanilla Ice just to start singing and rapping at some point during the song.
I don't know if Jack Lenz came up with like the barking one, because in not to get ahead of ourselves, in the Haunted House game episode, it's a later season, so the theme, like the opening credits, just kind of like skim by pretty fast, and when they do the dog, it doesn't do the bark bark. It's just okay, let's just get on with the fucking episode.
Yeah, they kind of just, and that's where like you see the G go up to a house, and then it shows like a montage of out of context scenes of other episodes from the series. And then of course once we get to, I believe it was season 3, which that episode you were talking about, Amy, aired, they kind of get rid of that part and just go straight into the title and then go into the episode. So
and I remember later on in the season they try to, like, I don't know why, just to make it seem like HIPAA revitalized the brand or whatever, but they renamed it Ultimate Goosebumps. And then they changed it so that when R.L. Stine, like, walks up the hill and the pages fly up, like, bats fly at the camera and go, "Meee!"
Well,
it was called Ultimate Goosebumps because at the time, kids were saying, "Ultimate!"
Were we, though?
Yeah, were we?
I don't know. I'm assuming that's what they think the kids will say.
Well, they might have thought that, yes. But kids didn't.
I remember all those Mountain Dew commercials where the skaters like did a trick and looked at the camera and said, "Ultimate!"
Tubular, man!
Tubular! And of course it has the famous quote, which is, "Viewer beware, you're in for a scare."
Dun, 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 dun!
Oh, Now, before we get to talking about our episodes, I think it would be interesting to talk about, because I'm only just looking this up right now in terms of trivia. Like, a lot of the books were adapted into episodes of the show, but there were quite a few that weren't, and I'm going to read out a list of Goosebump books that weren't actually turned into episodes for the show. Would you all like to know what they were?
Yes, please.
All right, so these are the ones that weren't made into episodes. The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. Surprisingly, Night of the Living Dummy wasn't made into a
show. Yes, they didn't do the first one.
Yeah, they did the sequels, but they never did the first one, which I think is
so ridiculous.
Because, like, I was watching the first, sort of going through the first season, like, you know, looking at the list, I'm thinking, wait a second, why is Night of the Living Dummy 2 there? Where's the first one? Did they just forgot to add it on there?
I have a theory on that. They didn't make it because Slappy's not the villain.
Oh.
It's Mr. Wood is the dummy in there, and then the twist at the end is, oh, there's this other dummy, Slappy, and he's alive, too.
I see.
I remember.
Also, Why I'm Afraid of Bees, which is also the autobiographical novel of Nicolas Cage.
I was going to say, they didn't adapt it because they couldn't get him.
Yeah.
Marcy's book is Why I'm Afraid of Beads.
Yes.
Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, like I'm too good for that.
Also, Monster Blood 2, Deep Trouble 2, Monster Blood 3, Horror at Camp Jelly Jam, which is surprising to me, but then again, that book was fucking terrifying. and also, The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena, Egg Monsters from Mars, The Beast from the East, Ghost Camp, Beware the Snowman, How I Learned It to Fly, Chicken Chicken, The Curse of Camp Cold Lake, which is another one that had a very creepy cover, The Haunted School, I Live in Your Basement, and Monster Blood 4. However, though, episodes are Cry of the Cat and Bride of the Living Dummy are the only stories from Goosebumps 2000 series to have been made into episodes.
Oh.
So I'm kind of surprised, like, looking back on the series, you think, oh, this book was made into an episode, but surprisingly they weren't. So
it's rather curious how, the whole thing with Night of the Living Dummy was a different sort of situation. But, you know, then you have a couple of episodes that had you had a couple of books that were very well established. So you'd think that the series would adapt the very first one first and then continue on with that particular storyline. So it's rather confusing to say the least, like, because we don't really know the circumstances as to the whys and the wherefores about it, do we?
Yeah, definitely. I guess with some of these stories, maybe some of them were probably a bit too costly to produce, because we got to remember, This was a kid's TV show in the 90s, so they probably only had like a certain amount of budget. And some of these ones, I could probably, they probably felt, we don't have the budget to make these, so we'll just stick to ones that were a bit more, you know, a bit more easy to do. So I could definitely see why something like the Snowman, the Abominable Snowman of Pasadena would have been made, because they would have to have built like an actual like snowman, like an Abominable Snowman for that episode. Mm. And all the other ones, you know, yeah, like Why I'm Afraid of Bees, I'd have to make like a kid with a bee with a kid's head on it or something.
Yeah, as popular as the show was, like it was a cheap production. Like they had to like, you know, cut costs wherever they could, and they recycled a lot of stuff, because I know later on in the One Day at Horrorland, that's a two-parter, I think it's in the second part, they refer to like a monster, it's like, you're gonna encounter Ripper, and they just literally show Saber from Welcome to Camp Nightmare. Like, it's literally just a Saber. And they don't even have him in action, it's just a picture of him, it's like a production still of Saber. Like, oh no, you poor dears, you didn't have any money.
Yes. But we'll get right to our discussions on the episodes that we have picked for this show. So, Marcy, tell us the episode you have picked for from Goosebumps you would like to talk about.
Okay. So, my episode pick is from season one. It is episode 15. It's called Say Cheese and Die. Synopsis, which I've described off IMDb because it makes life easy. Greg and his friends break into an old warehouse where they find an unusual camera. However, the photographs Greg takes with them seem to predict disaster, and he becomes convinced the camera is a curse. This episode is probably more well known because it stars a very young Ryan Gosling as Greg.
Baby!
Yeah, which is, sorry, Bede.
I was going to say, Marcy, he's not the only well-known name in this episode.
Who else?
Because you know who played the cop in the glasses in this episode?
Oh, it's, Scott Speedman from Felicity.
Yes.
Yeah. Holy shit.
I was, like, sitting there watching the episode, because, like, I mean, I knew Ryan Gosling was in this episode, but I was, like, sitting there, and when he and, like, the two cops showed up, I'm, like, looking, it's like, wait a second, is that Scott Speedman? And that's it was. Right.
Yeah.
See, I thought I did a double take, I'm like, wait, that's not CCH Pounder as the other cop, is it?
Oh, jeez. But, Marcy, tell us more about this episode. Why did you want to talk about this one?
Besides having those young names, and obviously, you know, they did this in Canada, so there's a lot of Canadians who went out and about here. I'm just going to get hate from all the Canadians. I'm sorry, you know, I love you. But yeah, like, I remember sort of, more so when I watched everything a few years ago, this one was one I was, like, really excited because I was like, oh, it's going to have young Ryan Gosling. But I actually really liked the story. I liked the concept of Say Cheese and Die, where you take this photo and what comes out is, like, what could happen. And I'm like, that's really freaky. That's a really cool concept. The episode quality itself, I think it's fairly good in the Goosebumps, you know, standard. It does look cheapish, but as we just mentioned, it's not like it had the biggest budget for a kid's TV show. So I think they did pretty freaking well with what they had. And the camera looked like one of the old school Cylons from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
Yes. But, you know, overall, I actually just really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was quite fun. And I really liked that concept. I think it was something very thought-provoking. And you could see something like that story be made into like a full-length film. But yeah, that's pretty much why I chose Say Cheese and Die. I just find it really enjoyable and cheesy. But I think the actual central story is really, really interesting. And I'm not sure like why, but the dude that's in the warehouse, they call him Spidey. But it's like, why is this episode referencing Spider-Man? It was a bit weird. Because, you know, Peter Parker takes the pictures of Spider-Man.
Well, they say at the beginning, it's like, oh, it's because of his long legs. That's how you know he's Spidey. But then it's just like, he's just some guy. It doesn't look like he's particularly, like, lanky or anything like that. He just runs around town in goggles just acting all shady, but not necessarily Spidey-y.
He had more of a Doc Ock vibe.
Yeah.
Almost, but, yeah.
But, like yeah. Thomas Dolby.
But yeah, that was really weird. But you know, I really enjoyed rewatching this episode in prep for the podcast. I still think it's a lot of fun. I think it holds up decently well. I think it tells the story in the best way that it can. So I think it's a very really enjoyable and fun episode. What do you guys think of Say Cheese and Die? I might pick on Bede.
I'm just going to sort of say this right off the bat. Of the episodes we're talking about from Goosebumps on this show, I think this one is definitely the best one because I feel like it's kind of the most successfully well-rounded one. Like, it's not to say that it doesn't have its flaws, because it does. I mean, this is a kids' TV horror show from the 90s, so it's very cheesy, very silly. The dialogue's not great, and some of the acting's not that good. Outside of Ryan Gosling, of course, because, you know.
Even he has moments where, like, he's in the back of the car where they almost have, like, this accident. And he's just, I'm guessing the director was like, all right, you just have to sit there really, like, freaked out. And his freaked out face, and it just stays on him for a while. And I'm like, oh, God, that's painful.
God he got better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, of course, he had the 90s boy cut.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Boy haircut, I should say.
So did everyone.
Yes, he was rocking that JTT cut.
Exactly. But yeah, I think of the ones, I feel like it was the strongest one because, again, I think it's sort of done its concept really well. Like it sort of, and like it sort of was able to make the story work and also, like it was one that I feel like, because that's the thing, I always found it kind of funny. Like this series would take like 100-odd page books and sort of condense them down into 20-minute episodes of a TV show. Like, I mean, I didn't read the book of Say Cheese and Die, but I'm kind of curious to see how they would have able to do that. I guess they would have had to, like, I guess kind of sort of streamline through it and hit all the sort of the major beats from the book. But I think for me, this is definitely the most entertaining episode. It definitely uses its concept really well. And also there are some pretty funny unintentional moments, like the actor who plays Ryan Gosling's older brother. I don't know why. God. He's meant to be, like, older than him, but he acts like he's 5 years old.
I know.
I have lost my shit during, like, the nightmare scene where he's just, like, double-teaming corn on the cob.
Yes.
He's just like, nom, 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 in another hand. Nom, nom, nom. It's like, dude.
He's up.
But I do appreciate, like, in that scene, too, in that dream sequence, that they actually went out of their way to kind of recreate the famous cover of the book.
That's true, yes.
Which, if I'm correct, like, it's kind of actually an improvement over what they did in the book, because I believe in the book, you don't, like, it isn't, they don't describe the nightmare as in, like, oh, you're reading him experiencing the nightmare. He's just telling, Greg is telling Sherry, like, I had a nightmare where my family was skeletons. Like, that's fucking weird. But then here, it's actually, oh, he's having a dream. So you get to see the dream.
It's really weird. But I agree with one of the characters in this episode that the camera just looks like a toaster. That's just what it looks like.
It's a Cylon, and they used to call Cylons toasters.
Yes. But, Amy, what did you think of this episode?
I'm kind of with Marcy in that, in terms of just being like a Goosebumps episode, like on its own, I thought it was fine. I only remember like so much of the book, and I know there was like another friend that came with them, so it's probably for the best that, you know, they just for storytelling efficiency, they just got it down to like that core group. It's a story that's been done like a bunch of times before, like Are You Afraid of the Dark? had like a camera causes weird things episode. Twilight Zone, the original, had a camera causes weird things episode. And this one was just kind of like it was entertaining enough. I think there's definitely some holes in the story that you could poke in, not to be like, oh yeah, this book, the series written for fourth graders, it has some logical inconsistencies. Mm. I don't want to fucking do that. But it's also, it's like, he can just throw the camera away. Like, even at the beginning, just like, he hasn't taken any, oh, he took the one picture of Bird, but otherwise, just like, oh, I have this camera. Just chuck it away. Spidey's not going to come after you. Just whatever. So it was hard for me to be like, dude, you just throw the camera away.
Yeah, I was like that as well. And what I find so hilarious, and it's not like, you know, performances or anything like that. It's just how it's written, where it's like every fucking person, oh, well, take my picture. And it's like, why do you want your picture taken so bad? And why would you trust a camera that looks like that?
This is a world where everybody cannot wait to get their picture taken.
You'd oh, what sort of world is that?
You'd think these people were, like, people now obsessed with, like, taking food photos for Instagrams.
It's like literally when Ryan Gosling just shows up with the camera, it's like, oh, take a picture with me right now. Like, we've been legit, like, 2 seconds of seeing
like, it. Why do those bullies need their picture taken so fucking badly?
And he just, the one bully pose like, hey, take a picture, man. Ooh, I'm mad.
Yeah, I know, right?
Even more hilarious was the reaction when they're trying to be, when Greg is like, oh, let's not take the car out, or you gotta take the car back. And Dad's like, you know what? Let's stop our dinner immediately. Leave the fucking place off. Let's go for a ride in our shitty station wagon, everybody.
I know. Yep. They were way too excited to go take the new car out for a spin. Like, the dad was like, just like, let's go for a drive, and then just runs away so quickly.
Oh, well, and I have to mention Spidey, that actor. I believe his name, Richard McMillan, who, another bit of trivia that I learned on IMDb, he played Scar in the Canadian stage production of a Lion King musical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I know he popped up later in another episode of Goosebumps. It was, like, one of the later seasons. I think it was, like, Teacher's Pet, and he was also, like, another villainous figure. I thought he was he did a pretty interesting job here, because, like, at the end, like, he's this, like, weird figure with, like, these dark shades, and he's always skulking about in the shadows. But there's, like, a small element of tragedy at the end, because when they finally decide to return the camera, he's like, I'm sorry, I can't let you leave. And he's, like, crying. He's like, I have no other choice. Like, whoa, what's this guy's story? And, like, he didn't need to do that, but he did.
Mm, definitely. It was a pretty interesting sort of addition to the story.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And what did you think, B?
Well, I just want to expand on what Amy said with regards to the whole, you know, when it comes to Goosebumps, you can't look too far into the logic category. Mm. That's not how these stories work. They're made for a specific audience, and you just need to appreciate that it's not, you know, made for anybody else. So bearing that in mind, I have to agree that Say Cheese and Die conceptually is very fascinating. The whole thing with the cursed object has been, you know, as what has also been established, it's been done time and time and again, and it's all about the execution, no pun intended. But also, do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Final Destination.
Mm.
Oh. Not exactly the same, but sort of the idea of premonition and possibility and trying to avert your fate. And that's an interesting idea to me, and it's just so cool that Stein had the faith in his readers to sort of like think about these types of notions and you know, sort of like entertain them in their mind, I do find that extremely respectful for an author to do. There's nothing worse than for a creator to insult the intelligence of their audience. Stein doesn't do that. And with Say Cheese and Die, you're taking something that's very, very dark and very, like, mind-boggling, and you're translating it for a young audience so they can digest it. So now in terms of the episode, I've got nothing to say that hasn't already been said by you folks. You know, that the acting's not exactly the best, but I did find the character of Spidey to be the most fascinating out of all of them. And I think that comes down to McMillan's own talent as an actor as opposed to the script. He has a very certain look about him, and just the way he's able to elevate the very sort of, you know, very digestible sort of material and sort of, you know, sort of boost it up a little bit more. That really does stand testament to McMillan as an actor. And it's really no surprise in that case that, you know, he played somebody like Scar on Broadway. So, yeah, I think that was a very interesting sort of line that McMillan sort of like walked. It was pretty cool. So, yeah, I'd say Say Cheese and Die was one of the more respectable entries in the Goosebumps franchise. So, yeah, those are my thoughts.
Awesome. Expanding on what you were saying about Stein, you know, trusting his readers to kind of handle, you know, like heavier themes and stuff. I know that Say Cheese and Die was one of the first batch of Goosebumps books. I think it was like number 4. It was very early on. And if you read those original books, some of them can get pretty gruesome. Like, Welcome to Dead House, it's like fucking zombies melting and shit. Like, it is pretty, pretty grim. And I know in Say Cheese and Die, the one thing I had just remembered, the ending is very much different than the TV episode. When they turn the camera on Spidey, he dies. Like, Spidey's fucking dead at the end of that book. And they see the picture, and it shows him having died of fright.
Wow.
Which, and then you get this very bizarre ending in the new one where, like, when they take his picture, he gets transported into the camera, and then, like, 2 minutes later, the bullies come in, and he just is standing out there going, ha 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 ha.
I liked the ending in the show. I thought it was good. I'm like, finally, these dickheads can get some comeuppance, because they really want their pictures taken.
You can't exactly grieve for these fuckers, can you?
No.
Fuck them. Fuck those kids.
And a funny thing is, we were talking about like how Are You Afraid of the Dark also had a sort of a curse kind of camera idea in it, and Ryan Gosling also appeared on that show as well.
Say what? Really?
Yeah.
God damn.
He was getting around in the children's horror anthology department.
Yeah, he was. Wow.
But I guess we'll move right along to Amy's pick. Now, Amy, which episode do you want to talk about for this show?
Well, the one I want to talk about is The Haunted House Game. It is season 3, I believe, episode 10. And it's kind of a... It's an offbeat pick, which I wanted to make because when I was first invited onto the show, I'm like, okay, do I want to talk about Haunted Mask right away? But that's like the one everyone like loves the book and loves the episode and everything. But I wanted to pick one that was kind of like not very talked about much, but is nevertheless kind of like the prototypical Goosebumps like story. It's one of the most like efficient ones, and I thought, boom, Haunted House Game. Because this wasn't based on a full book. It was based on a short story from one of the collections. I think it was number 3, the Even More Tales to Give You Goosebumps. Which, if you go to that series, they just did not have the biggest imagination at all. Because eventually it's like, more and more tales to give you goosebumps. More and more tales to give you goosebumps. And I'm surprised not more of them were adapted into... episodes, because like a number of them were, but there was quite a few of those stories that they were just kind of left untouched. But anyway, Haunted House Game, it's a pretty simple setup. You got two kids, one of whom, the boy, we're going to see a little bit later in this as we talk about the episode. And secondly, the girl, who is played by Laura Vandervoort, who would go on to become Kara in Smallville.
Yes.
Well.
Yep, and yes. Indigo on the Supergirl TV series nowadays. But anyway, they're kind of walking past this house, like, apparently on the way to, like, a pep rally. I think they mentioned that in passing. And they see, like, this little girl who's kind of, like, a little girl out of time. It's like she's from like the 1940s and has that kind of like very old-fashioned dress, and she's like, oh, I lost my cat. And so, you know, like, okay, spooky shenanigans are up, and they're like, oh, he went into that house. Okay, we'll find it. And the show, or this episode, doesn't really waste any time. It gets you into the thick of things pretty fast, because they go up the stairs in this house, and they're like, the, like, something mansion game. And then they basically get sucked into the game and have to play the game in order to somehow exit the haunted house. And so that's the episode. It's just, like, them encountering one crazy situation after another. And what I liked about it was that for the age range, because, you know, again, this was for a young audience, they kind of had to, like, work together and, like, sort of, like, think a little bit more and solve, like, these solve these puzzles. Be like, okay, there's cards that give them clues, like, get some R&R. And they're like, well, what's R&R? And then they kind of walk around and, like, bump into stuff like, whoa, rod and reel. And that's one of, like, the things that they can use later on to try and help them get out of the house. And speaking of the cards, this is one of, like, the funniest moments in the entirety of, like, the episodes we watched, where it's the first one, which is they have to visit, like get something from, like, a compass from a guy in a casket. And there's a platform there, and it has, like, the big card on it. It says action card, and the girl looks at it and goes, I think this is the action card.
Yeah.
No, like, shit.
No shit. I just love that. Oh my god. But aside from that moment, it's like, it was pretty good. Like, I liked the makeup effects on the on these kind of like ghouls that pursue them. You kind of have like these two female ghosts that are kind of patterned after like whatever happened to Baby Jane. A little bit of like Grey Gardens mixed in there. Like, very pancake makeup, like very heavy makeup. Then you have, like, a zombie fisherman who's got, like, a skeleton arm, and you have, like, the sea captain. There's a lot of, like, fishing stuff. Yeah. And the fisherman and, like, the sea captain, who's just kind of, like, he's, I don't know, that's, guess that's what happened to Willem Dafoe after The Lighthouse. Why did you spill your... Why did you spill your dice?
Beans.
But it does a pretty effective job, because like when they like face these challenges like that one in the casket, all of a sudden the guy's right behind him and he's just coming after them very slowly, like, and his face is all gray, and it's like, this is kind of creepy. And it's like I said, I enjoyed the episode one because it's, you know, it's pretty efficient with its storytelling, gets right to the point, has some kind of cool, like, little jump scares in there and everything. It has, like, you know, the obligatory twist at the end. And I really enjoyed the concept of it. Just like the game where they gotta, you know, put their heads together and be like, okay, we can't just run away from these issues. We have to actually, you know, problem solve together. And I liked that angle, and I thought it was a pretty well done episode overall.
And what did you pick, Barcy?
I enjoyed this one. I'm not sure if I have memories of watching it previously, but it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, sort of the Jumanji concept of being into, like, in the game. But whereas Jumanji, all the animals and whatever came out of the game, this one, like, you have to go on the actual, like, board of the game, and then it transports you to, like, whatever thing you land on. So I really liked that about it. Some of it was a bit cheesy and lame, but I think that just adds to the enjoyment. Like, you know, I think this is an action card. Like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. but no, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought, yeah, this is pretty cool. It was quite clever, I think, in how it handled playing like a board game, and, you know, they've got to have the dice and they find all these clues and stuff. And I had a feeling, like, in the film where they run into some other kids who are like, oh, we've been in here for years. I'm like, I bet that's just part of the game. And it was. And I really liked the twist and then twist ending. I thought that was actually very clever, where it's like, oh, well, you're going to be part of the figures for the game. And then you see the out-of-time little girl just luring more people in the house. It was cool.
What you were saying about the dice, one of the clever bits that I remember from the episode was that, you know, they were trying to escape the old ladies section where it's like they give the girl a locket and it starts turning her hand, like her entire arm just starts getting shriveled and old.
Yeah.
And he like rolls the dice, but then they go through like a hole in the floor and he can't get them. But the ladies are playing games, so he grabs those dice and uses them. It's like, oh, that's, you can get out of that situation. Like, you can still do that. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, and the effects for what happens to her hand are actually really good, too.
They were, even for the time.
Yeah. Very sort of creepy, just like, ugh, moment in that one.
And what about you, B?
The Haunted House game, you know what? That title sounds so much like a creepypasta. It really does.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
But I just want to touch a little bit more on that twist ending. I always believe the best twists aren't the ones that you didn't see coming, but the ones you should have seen coming. Because the answers were basically right there in front of you. And once again, it just comes back to that really cool thing that Stein is doing by entrusting his audience to sort of like really get into the deeper implications. Like, how long has this game been going on? How many people are stuck in it? What sort of fate are they suffering inside of it? I mean, these people, they're basically in purgatory. They are suffering. And it's just, it's such a distressing concept to think about. And, you know, I just love it so much. And the fact that you can sort of associate that with Jumanji has its own sort of deeper meanings when it comes to, you know, just torment and just like growing up and, you know, working these sort of things out. So it's such a cool concept that I feel that's like, you know, pretty well done for all intents and purposes. It's just like, say, Tease and Die. I felt it was one of the stronger entries into the show otherwise.
Definitely. Mm.
This was my first time watching the show because I don't remember actually seeing it during its initial run. Because I have a feeling, though, by the time this episode aired, I think I was starting to get, like, kind of move away from all things Goosebumps. Because I remember the first two seasons, but I don't remember watching anything from the last two, at least from what I remember anyway. So I don't remember seeing this episode at all. So this was basically a first time watch for me. And you know what? I quite enjoyed it as well. And I'd like like what you have already said, it does have that sort of Jumanji type of concept with its premise, which I really dug about it. And also what did drew me into the episode was the title, The Haunted House Game, which is like, ooh, what could that be? Like that, you know, like all the endless possibilities of what that title has to offer. And I think this episode at least did a pretty solid job of using its concept really well. And, you know, and also like a lot of sort of like the fun imagery and sort of the creepy moments in that. And I did enjoy the Whatever Happened to Baby Jane reference with the two
that was clever.
With the two older women. And I'm also still puzzling, like, why is there fisherman motif in this whole episode, even though this is not set anywhere near a beach. But you know, it's a fun little episode. Like, it uses its concept really well, and like, it does have its cheese, of course. Like, some visual effects definitely work really well, and others definitely have not stand the test of time. Like the scene where they're going down this hallway and the hallway stretches out, it just looks so hilariously bad. But yeah, it's a pretty decent episode. And this is what I can definitely say. Like, I think a lot of the episodes we're talking about tonight, I could definitely see could be updated and redone, like whether it be like feature film episodes or, you know, like if they would do like a reboot of this series, like you could definitely do a lot with these stories and expand them a little bit more. So I think the Haunted House Game is definitely one that could easily work as a feature or like a 1-hour episode of a TV show.
Oh, sure.
Actually, Actually, I think I've put together some sort of harebrained reason as to why there is so much nautical imagery in this episode. The little girl is basically the lure. She is fishing, and she's drawing everyone back into her ocean. There you go. She's fishing.
Oh.
Interesting. Interesting.
Clever girl.
Yes.
But was there any final thoughts on this episode before we go on to B's pick?
Definitely worth watching. It's a good one. I enjoyed it.
Well, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, it is what it is, and what it is pretty entertaining. Simple as that.
We would like to send a huge thank you to the amazing Podcorn for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. You can check them out at podcorn.com/podcasters. If you, like us, are a podcaster, Podcorn is a fantastic place to check out. You can find amazing sponsorship deals, which links you up to perhaps other podcasts that you can help grow or products that you actually really love and want to spread the word about. It's an amazing community, and it's been really friendly and such a rewarding experience. There is no middleman. We can browse all the amazing opportunities or perhaps make one of our own, and we can collaborate with people and brands directly. It's kind of amazing. I highly recommend this. So if, like us, you are a podcast, please check out Podcorn. You can see it in the show notes, or you can go to podcorn.com. And if you are looking to advertise your product, just head to Podcorn as an advertiser. It's freaking amazing. Definitely check it out, guys. And once again, thank you so much to Podcorn. You are amazing. We love and adore you. And now back to the show.
And B, tell us the episode you've chosen for tonight.
Aha. Yes, just give me a second. Return of the Mummy. Mama! According to IMDb, the very top-to-toe synopsis of this particular episode is, while visiting his uncle and shithead cousin in Egypt, visiting his uncle and cousin in Egypt, Gabe inadvertently brings a mummified prince back from the dead, as you fucking do. I just want to start this particular segment by saying, I remember reading both this book and the very first one and, loving it. And when I got around to checking out this particular episode, I was looking back through the catalogue of the show, and then I saw that, this is season one, so you think that you would have the first story first and, the second story second. Well, there is no such thing as the first story in the first season. And I was just like, what?
No kidding.
Why would you not do that? But also, I feel that Return of the Mummy, what the fuck? Return of the Mummy and Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, it appeals to me in particular because, it's universal horror. It's classic monsters. Mm-hmm. And for all of the imaginative ghosts and ghoulies and goblins that Stein comes up with, I do feel he does a very good job with writing material about creatures that we are already quite well aware of. And it's an interesting spin on the mummy story. For one, I could be wrong, but I don't believe the mummy ever had any designs on a particular woman. At least I don't think he did. So usually with the mummy stories, it's always about a woman. But in this case, it's not. And it's just so refreshing. So in terms of acting, I have to say, Sari, the shithead cousin, is absolutely insufferable.
Yeah.
I hated her in the book. I hated her in the show. But by saying that, I think that was by design, because Sari was always supposed to be very smug because her father is a super cool Egyptologist who's going to all these digs and sites and uncovering all these treasures. And Gabe is the cousin who lives in America, so he's spending some time with his cousin and his uncle, and he's sort of like seeing this world and just experiencing all of it. Meanwhile, Sari is just like, you know, it's, you know, oh, I see this every day, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, oh, shut up.
There's real fucking shit editing this.
Come on, Gabe. I know how cameras work. Shut up.
Shut the fuck up. Sorry. yeah, it's once again, I'm not going to come down too hard on the artistic side of, you know, how this episode was made, but it's not necessarily as strong as the previous two episodes we've discussed, but goddamn, it really does appeal to my more nostalgic values, and, you know, I can't truly hate it. As much as I don't like Sari, you know, it's all part and parcel as to what makes this particular story work. It has its own identity.
Definitely.
And what did you think, Marcy?
I actually really strongly remembered watching this when I rewatched it. So I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that part, yeah. And I'm like, was that kid always just asking for a punch in the head? Wow. She is awful. And the boy, I'm like, why is he acting younger than what his age clearly is?
Mm.
But I guess they were kind of going for the, you know, he's exploring a new country, this exciting, like, archaeological, like, you know, science and stuff. So I get that. But, you know, you can't really say too much because, you know, a lot of the actors were kids and they did their best and they, you know, had certain materials and stuff to work with. So it is what it is. That's, I still right. find it, you know, fairly enjoyable, as much as I'm like, God, can, like, some curse get Sari and just fuck her off? She's such a bitch.
Yes, yes.
But other you than know. That, like, much like with you, B, I liked how sort of the story with the mummy was very different, because it's not like this was a mummy who wanted to be resurrected to find his lost love or something. No. His lost love or whatever was like, I need to bring the mummy, you know, this dude, I forgot the name, was it Horu or something?
Yeah.
Horu, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I've got to bring him back. And he's like, no, I don't want this. Don't want to die. No. I'm like, wow, this was actually, like, really different and fresh. I liked that. I'd say it's sort of, like, in terms of Goosebumps, like, quality, I'd say it's kind of, like, middle of the road. I think it's a fairly solid episode, but there's definitely ones that aren't as good, and there's ones that are perhaps, you know, done a little bit better. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I'm pretty much going to be in agreement with all three of you. Sorry, I hated her so much throughout this whole episode.
I didn't get to talk about it.
She, to me, is the real villain of this episode.
Yes, thank you.
She is, actually. But, Bede, I think you skipped over Amy.
Oh, sorry, Amy, go ahead.
Yeah, how dare you, presumptuous person, you. I done come up with a good name. Sorry.
Go right ahead.
yeah, I'm kind of with you. I would say this and Say Cheese and Die are kind of like, of the episodes we watched today, they're kind of like tied for last. Like, I believe, like, for when the books came out, this was the first one I got when it was, like, super brand new, because I had said, like, I came to the series a little bit late, and I think this was the newest one that had come out at that time. And and this is just a totally wild guess. I think that's maybe why they did this instead of Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, where it's like, this was the newer book. So, like, it's fresher in kids' heads, so they're going to be more familiar with it. Which, it does, in doing that, kind of undoes some of the narrative hang-ups from that first book, because, you know, they go through the experience of, like, seeing mummies come to life in the first one, and in Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, and then in Return of the Mummy, they, like, completely forgot everything, and they're like, well, mummies coming to life? Yeah, right. It's like, you just fucking did that last year!
Do we have collective amnesia or something?
Yeah. And, like, with the subplot with Gabe and his summoner. By the way, Gabe, played by Daniel DeSanto, who is part of the main cast on Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Mm.
Yeah, so he is Canadian children's horror royalty there.
Mm.
But anyway, like the subplot with his summoner in the books, he found it in a garage sale in like Ohio or something.
And it's of course
like, he did. Did a mummy's hand get over there? And then here it's, oh, I bought this at the airport, which is like, okay, I can buy that. Like, oh, this is just a weird little trinket. Nope, real cursed mummy's hand. As for the episode, yeah, I definitely share that Sari dislike, and I know in the books, like, she was a lot worse, Gabe was a lot worse, because they had a rivalry thing going on, and in this one, he was kind of more like, yeah, just buzz off, Sari, yeah. And they were just even worse in the book. But overall, like B said, it was a throwback to just basic, you know, like, universal monsters, the classics. There's You got the mysterious tomb, you got like the possible treasures, and you got like the mummy coming to life and just going, and which, you know, the mummy makeup wasn't too bad either. It was pretty condensed in terms of story, where it's like you'd think that this huge find, like, oh, we found the secret tomb, we're not gonna hire a crew or anything, it was just gonna be me and these dipshit kids following me. We're gonna bust that mummy out ourselves. but overall, it was a fine enough episode. Like, it did its job, and I don't regret watching it. I regret Sari being in it, but I don't regret watching it.
Co-signed.
To iterate what I said before, I hate Sari with a passion throughout this whole episode. And she is definitely, without a doubt, to me, the real villain of this whole episode, but I digress. But I guess for me, this is definitely, I agree with Amy, this is definitely kind of the one of the weaker episodes, at least of the four we're talking about, mainly because it feels so condensed in terms of its scope. Like, it really is like, you know, when they go to this tomb to look for this mummy, but yet it's only just like Gabe's uncle and his daughter and him, and that's just about it. There's nobody else there, no other scientists or archaeologists or anyone. It's just those them three, and that's about it. And even more so at the end, when it's like all this stuff has happened and they've got reporters, like, you never see the reporters. It's like, oh, there's reporters outside, what should I tell them? And it just feels like it just feels like a way smaller episode, at least on a scale-wise, that it needed to be. And also, I was kind of like, for an episode called Return of the Mummy doesn't really turn up until legit the last 4 minutes of the episode.
Literally.
So it's made to like a Bride of Frankenstein kind of situation. I mean, I don't know. This episode kind of a little annoyed me a little bit. Like, I didn't care for any of the characters. I like the concept of what you've already said before about this isn't a mummy that's being brought back to life to go search for its long lost love. This is one that's more kind of pissed off and annoyed that his sister is trying to resurrect him, and he's like, oh, can't you just leave me this? Let me just be dead already.
Just let me go to sleep. God, exactly. Damn. Like, that's total mood.
Exactly. And I can totally relate to the mummy on that level. And if anything, the mummy's sister, Nyla, she was way creepy because there's like a shot where she's like smiling. And I'm like, okay, that's like the most unsettling thing in this episode.
You know what? She also reminded me of Anaxuna Moon from Stephen Sommers movie.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, though, because she has a driver who's played by Jerry Messadino. I probably butchered his last name, so forgive me. And I was looking at him thinking, like, why does this guy look familiar? Because he just looks so familiar, and I couldn't picture him, like, where he was from. And then I was just looking him up before, and he played Uncle Taki in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But he's got quite a few credits to his name, so that's you probably have seen him in something. You're just not exactly sure where, so.
He's still got a lot of work. That's the main thing. Jeez.
I was looking up, like, the actress who played Sari, and one, she's done, like, a lot of voiceover work, and I believe she's still active, so she's had a good career as like a voiceover artist, like into adulthood. And two, she's in other Goosebumps episodes. I believe it's Night of the Living Dummy 3 as the performer in the Slappy costume.
Oh.
Oh, that makes sense, doesn't it? The true villain, once again.
It was me all along, GMP.
Although the interesting thing is, Afrod Gooder, who plays Nyla, this was only one of two credits like she has on IMDb. She did this episode, appeared on an episode of, I think it was like, let me just look this up, because I did look it up before, but I've lost. Oh, wait a minute, it's right here. On Air Crash Investigation, and that was about it.
Oh.
She's has not appeared in anything else since. And obviously she did not want this episode on her CV, but I suppose, I guess.
the past never passes.
But yeah, I guess for me, like, I guess my final thoughts on this episode, it's definitely one of the weaker ones. Like I said, there's definitely a lot of potential there, but I just felt like it didn't really sort of do much with its story. And the fact that the mummy itself doesn't appear until, like, legit the last few minutes of the episode was kind of, like, a bit underwhelming. And also the characters, especially with Sari in particular, were a bit obnoxious. So...
I'm starting to feel a little bad about just laying into her all the time and just like, oh, she's a kid.
Well, yeah, don't worry.
And we were kids too back then, so no, I don't feel guilty at all.
Yeah, exactly. And she won't be the only obnoxious kid we're going to be talking about on this show.
No. So.
No.
But, yes, but Marcy, what is your final thoughts on this episode?
I already had my talk on this episode.
I know that, but...
yeah, no, it's an okay episode. It's, you know, sort of mid to lower tier, I think, in terms of quality. Yeah, I mean, as much as I want to punch, you know, Sari in the face, and I feel bad for saying that, but, you know, the character is just that annoying. But, yeah, no, I don't mind the episode overall.
And what about you, Amy?
Yeah, same. It was totally serviceable, nothing. I was like it did, in terms of adapting the book, you know, to the best of my memory, it was fine. As a story by its own, it was fine. Like, it was an all right episode overall.
And, B, since this was your pick for this episode of the show, what are your final thoughts on it?
The way I feel about this particular episode is it's like one of those digestive biscuits with a light coating of chocolate on it. It's just fun enough to satisfy, but nowhere near as spectacular or as tasty or as worthwhile as it should be.
Definitely. Now I guess we'll come to my episode, which, being on brand for me, out of all the episodes I picked, the one I picked was a two-part episode.
I purposely picked a... single standalone one, and you go to pick a two-parter, like, seriously.
Because Beat is extra.
Well, I have a perfectly good reason why I picked this episode, because this was actually the very first episode of the show that I saw.
Hey!
And I believe, because I know, like, in the US, this episode, the episode The Haunted Mask was the pilot episode of the series, but I think when the show aired here on Channel 10 back in the day, I think, Welcome to Camp Nightmare was actually the episode they showed first.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they aired some of the episodes out of order, and I think this... So they aired this one instead, but I do remember as a kid, like, this show, like, I didn't mention this in the sort of the beginning, was kind of a big deal at the time, because they actually aired this show on Saturday night, on Saturday at nighttime, rather than during the day. Which is kind of interesting, like, for a kid's show. Because I remember seeing this, like, around about... It was either 6:30 or 7 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Okay.
And they would show, like, two episodes. Like, a whole one-hour bracket of Goosebumps episodes. So so they played both part one and part two of Welcome to Camp Nightmare as the very first one here in Australia. So that's the main reason why I picked it. So for those out there who don't know what... Welcome to Camp Nightmare is, it's this plot, which I'm reading off IMDb, is as follows. Billy and his fellow campers arrive at Camp Nightmare, where they encounter a strange creature and oddly uncaring counselors. However, it would appear that nightmarish adventure is just beginning. Now, like I said, what I said before about the reasons why I picked this episode, because it's like the very first one that I saw from the show. I guess what, well, that was kind of really the main reason for picking this episode. But the episode itself, it is definitely one of the weaker episodes. Now that in, like, at the time, I thought, oh, this is a really good episode. But then when it got to the twist ending, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yep.
And that's probably why, another reason why I picked this episode, because the twist ending of this episode just comes out of left field.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, because there's really no build-up to it. But the episode on its own, like, right out of the gate, like, this episode just made me laugh so much.
Yep.
Because you got all these kid actors who are very bad, and they're all, like, and, like, there's no good performance among these kids. I mean, I won't be too harsh on them because, you know, they're kid actors, but still, like their performances are just bizarre. And also this Camp Night Moon has to be the most disorganized, horrible-looking camp I've ever seen in a film or a TV show. If all the cabins look like they're just abandoned shacks that were out in the woods. And then, like, there's a one shack that, like, the forbidden one, it's like, you're not allowed to go in there. Never go into that one. It's like, it looks almost as normal as the other shacks in this camp.
Just with some extra TP effects.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And also, for one that's supposed to be abandoned, every time they go, they flash to it at nighttime, there's friggin' lights on inside the friggin' shack, which doesn't make sense. And also, like, there's more foliage throughout this whole camp there is than actual buildings. So the layout of this camp just puzzles me. And it just looks so decrepit. And it looked like it'd been abandoned for, like, at least 40 years. And also, like, all the characters are just weird and bizarre. Like, Uncle Al, he's like to be, like, the caring camp, like, head camp counselor, but he just gives off this really creepy vibe that really unsettled me. And also, of course, it features probably next to Sari, one of the most hateable characters
ever
from Goosebumps, Larry.
Go fuck yourself, Larry.
Honestly, when Larry showed up, I honestly thought it was, keep forgetting the actor's name. He was in, like, People Under the Stairs. What was that actor's name?
Sean Whalen?
Yes, Sean Whalen. I thought, that's Sean Whalen. Oh, wait, it's not him. But he acts like Sean Whalen in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, when you find out, like, why the camp counselors are behaving how they are and how they sort of treat everyone at this camp, okay, that kind of makes kind of sense in hindsight once you know the twist. But at the same time, though, you're like, why are these counselors such dicks to all these kids?
Yep.
looking like two kids who are ostensibly, like, drowning in a canoe accident. He's like, he literally says, I wasn't here. I was at the lodge.
Yep.
And also, like, until the twist happens, you're like, okay, so this is a camp where this creature called Saber is out there in the woods, and it has killed kids in the past. And they're like, oh, we'll just keep the camp opening. I'm like, what?
But B, you can, if you stay on the trails, you'll be fine, unless, like, there's all the times where Saber just does whatever he wants anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And Saber itself looks like sort of like a prototype version of the werewolf from An American Werewolf in London, except just not scary.
It looked like a teddy bear.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very snuggly monster.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The monster that you are.
Look at the kitty.
Are you going to give you the noise?
He looks more cuddly than scary throughout the episode. But I guess we have to get to the twist, because there's no way we could talk about this episode without getting to the twist. So, our character of Billy, played by Kaj Erickson.
Wait, that's his name?
Yes. That is his name. So, it's basically like being named John Johnston.
His parents must really hated him.
Exactly. But, okay, we'll get to the twist. So basically, all the strange stuff is happening. Counselors are, I mean, some of his friends are disappearing. The camp counselors are acting like they've never heard any of these kids before. And, of course, you've got Saber going around eating other counselors. And, of course, you've got this forbidden shack that Uncle Al and Larry and Dad tell him they're not allowed to go in there. And then so it has a really good mystery at first. Like, what is going on? Like, why are people disappearing? And why are the camp counselors just forgetting that these people even exist? But then the twist happens, because you find out, for Billy, all of this was basically a test set up by his parents and the government to see if he is able to, I guess, you know, basically, like, is able to go on their top secret mission. But here's the thing. What is their top secret mission? Going to Earth. So, in fact, you find out that this whole place, what you think is the planet Earth, is actually an alien planet with humanoid creatures on it.
Yep.
Yay!
See, I thought this was leading up to, like, the adults or the camp counselors, whatever, were sacrificing the children to protect themselves against Saber. But I was so wrong.
Nope.
I mean, I'll give the episode credit for, like, taking such a bizarre left turn of a twist that you would not expect coming. But even, like, when I saw this episode as, like, 10 or 11 years old, like, I was enjoying it, and then when the twist happened, I was like, wait, what? Like, it just doesn't make any sense, and it's weird.
Yep.
Where is this planet? It's so close to Earth!
It's, they point it, it's almost like the distance from the moon.
Exactly.
And another question is, what's this mission? Why do they want to go to Earth? Like, why do they feel that taking on this bizarrely over-the-top training will be beneficial to them? Like, do they want to invade? Do they want to integrate? Do they want to... I don't know. What the fuck is going on?
Because twist, B.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. Like, what all the things that happened to Billy throughout this whole episode, like, why... How is this going to help him on his mission to Earth?
They mentioned something about, like, problem solving and, like, showing empathy and quick thinking. It's glossed over pretty fast. They're like, hey, we put you through these challenges. You passed!
Indeed. Because I never read the book that this episode was based on, but I can imagine maybe they probably go into it a little bit more. But even then, this one, I remember, out of all the twists that were featured on this show, this is just, like, the most bizarrest one of them all.
Yeah, thanks.
Wait till you see the episode where it's, like, they turn out to be monsters with eyes on the backs of their heads.
Yes, I do remember that one. And that actually is one that actually makes sense. It actually works. But this one just doesn't. But enough about my ramblings on this episode. Marcy, what did you think? What other thoughts do you have on Welcome to Camp Nightmares Part 1 and 2?
Oof, okay, well, alright, so I'm watching this right from the get-go. Like, the kids are in the bus going to camp, suddenly this weirdo driver, like, pulls over, they all get out, and then he starts, like, taking their luggage out, and the kids are just, like, so nonchalant about just being abandoned in the middle of nowhere. They're like, what are you doing? Stop. Stop that.
He's not saying anything. It's just like, fuck them kids.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, but stop. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what? What the fuck? Okay. And then out of nowhere, like, whatever the guy is, Uncle Al.
Yes.
Which is creepy to be calling him that, but anyway. He's like, oh, no, there's lots of wildlife and stuff, and, you know, it's a mile walk to camp, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was stupid, but you don't tell the kids or anything. So they walk there, all right. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, as I'm watching this, fuck, I went on, like, one school camp, and I fucking hated it. And I'm thinking people going away for what, the whole summer or a month at one of these shit camps, a camp like this, who the fuck sends their kids there? What is this crap? I don't get it.
Even at the time, I was like, there was a lot of camp things because there was a lot of Camp Goosebumps books and there was like Camp Nowhere, the movie, and then like other things like, hey, we're all going to camp. I don't know anybody around here that like went to camp like that.
Yeah, I don't think I've met anyone who's spent, you know, all this time at a camp. Like, what the fuck? Like, at least in school, you might go for, say, two days to maybe a week or something. But I'm like, I don't fucking get this. But anyway, as soon as the boys are in, like, their shack, whatever the fuck it is, one of the kids is like, oh my god, there's a snake, and he's bitten by this snake, and the boys are kind of freaking out. And then they tell, like, their camp leader or whatever the fuck he's meant to be, Larry. And he just comes in like this fucking dickhead, like, oh, you got bit with him, me, 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 me. That's basically what he sounds like. He's being a total dick. And I'm like, how can he act this way when a child has been bitten by an unknown snake? Like, they go to the camp thing or whatever it was, the camp fire songs, I don't know. They said it was 1900. It looked like it was 1300 or something. And the poor kid's like sitting away from anyone else, and Billy goes to help him. And they're like, well, what are you doing? This is a blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what the fuck is up with everyone? I just did not go, what the hell? I'm like, who acts like this? And even knowing the twist, I'm like, but what does this achieve for this kid?
What does it mean?
It is like, I'm like, just, what? This kid could die from a snake bite, and they're all like, whatever.
And I like that snake scene because it's like they establish later once the twist happens, like, oh, it's a rubber snake. But when you actually see the snake in that scene,
it was a real snake.
It was moving.
It was real. And every fucking time you see Larry. Fucking hell. It's like, dude, do you want me to shove your head right up your fucking ass? Go away! But despite all of these things, this episode is fucking just funny and stupid and, oh golly gosh, this is like, what's the best analogy? This is like the Troll 2 of Goosebumps.
Ooh!
Yes. It is so stupid, but it's insanely entertaining that, you know, it makes up for everything. It's just a big mess of stupid, and I enjoyed the fuck out of it as much as I wanted to. Kill Larry.
Hey, Marcy, this is the Troll 2 of Goosebumps episodes, but it has the twist ending of Night Killer.
Yes. But anyway, I've rambled enough. Amy, it's your turn.
This might have been my favorite episode of tonight.
Oh, there we go.
Well, first of all, I love that opening scene, one with like the bus driver is just like, just doesn't even say a word, just chucks all their shit, gets out of there. And then, like, they hear something like, oh no, there's some animal in the woods. Explosion. Cut to Uncle Al standing there like a pose out of, like, a fucking Dirty Harry movie with a flare gun, and he just has this badass, like, whew, like he blows out of the barrel and goes, latest technology. What? A flare? What the hell is that?
No lights.
Just, oh god, he's just so badass, like, latest technology.
Make my day.
I actually thought this, and not even really joking here, this was maybe the most thematically strong. out of all the stories, because there's this undercurrent of, like, emphasizing compassion and sympathy over, like, this toxic masculinity, and it's baked into, like, the dialogue and how the camp is set up, because all the whole episode, like, you have Larry and Uncle Al telling them, like, hey, stop being a whiner, whatever, just shake it off. They literally say, like, man up at one point, or tough it up at one point. Like even for, like, snake wounds, and it's all about how, like, Billy, like, learns to, you know, tap into that side of himself. There's, like, to show concern for others who aren't him, despite this huge, like, oppressive environment that he's in. Even in the camp song, there's the line, because they have the captions on, they sing the line, like, whiners and coddlers are not welcome here. And then you have, like, the, and it's more of a subtle thing, but, like, Bede was talking about, oh, the bunks all look like shacks. That might have been, like, by design. It'd be like, hey, this is all you need. We're not gonna, like, we're not gonna coddle you here. Like, you're gonna learn how to live in the wilderness and rough it. And so, like, that's why they get this unnameable goop for breakfast while Larry gets, like, bacon and toast.
Wow.
And going off of, like, the Larry thing, I love how most of the all of the activities at this camp are, like, in the middle of doing something else, and then they just suddenly go, hey, we're going to the lake. Just stop what you're doing, leave your plates all over, just, we're going to play baseball now. Like, there's no schedule, no nothing, but I thought that was a funny thing. But, yeah, I kind of enjoyed that, like, thematic undercurrent going on there. As for the twist ending, I think it probably worked better in the book, because I think in the book there wasn't so many hints that, like, oh, this is obviously supposed to be Earth because they're playing baseball and whatever, because they can get away with it more, like, your imagination and, like, fill in the blanks in the book format, but as opposed to the show where it's like, yeah, this is just, like, whatever, this is supposed to be Earth, and they're like, oh no, that's Earth. Wait, what? But, yeah, I enjoyed this, and actually, this story for when I had first seen this episode, because this was the first two-parter that aired here in the States. Like I said, like, I was a huge Goosebumps fan, and towards the end of that first episode, where they're like, oh, where they're camping outside, and it's like, oh, Saber's coming, and, like, they got Roger, and I'm like, whoa, this is almost to the end of, like, the episode, but there's still a lot more story to go. And then it said, to be continued. And I was just like, what? No!
Yeah.
Another week!
That's probably why they aired, like, two episodes, like, here in Australia, back-to-back. So when the two-parters came, like, they aired both of them so kids wouldn't be pissed off.
Yeah. And I would be remiss to mention Roger, the annoying kid who makes non-jokes, where it's like, damn, in One Piece. One Piece.
He's Bede? Yeah, I know.
He was the main kid from the Haunted House game.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well,
he looks familiar. Oh, he was in the previous one.
Yeah, well, we've talked about, like, a lot of actors appeared in a few, but when you kind of go to the main IMDb page of the Goosebumps TV show and it lists a lot of the actors that appear on it, most of them at least appeared in two or three separate episodes.
Mm.
Like, Laura Vandervoort, she was in two other episodes outside of the Haunted House game episode.
Nice.
And, B, what did you think of Welcome to Camp Nightmare?
You know what? What wouldn't I give to see Paul Verhoeven direct a film about this?
Yes.
Think about it. Just entertain the possibility. Okay, so just talking about the show, what specifically the episodes as they are. Okay, first and foremost, I loved the book where this came from. So when I sat down to, you know, watch this episode way back in the day, I was hotly anticipating it because I loved that story so much, and I just wanted to see, you know, how much of the tale would translate onto the screen. And well, when I was a kid, I liked it. I thought it was okay, but it wasn't until very recently, and also with what Amy herself said about the whole sort of underlying fact that this this camp has a very toxic masculinity sort of angle. And you, because you know what, you see this sort of attitude being reflected every single day, and it's in places like camps that sort of like stimulate this particular behavior. Like people cross, or rather confuse, resilience for, you know, being you know, completely emotionally shut down. There's no sort of it's a fascinating concept, but I felt that the twist ending in the show didn't necessarily feel earned. It just completely, it's like a sucker punch. It's a sucker punch that comes out of nowhere. And when it comes to writing twists, you've got to have foundations that sort of like build up to this point. When you think about it after you see it and you think, you know what? Yes, I remember this being said, or somebody doing this. It didn't feel that way with how the show did it.
It was really lacking actual clues rather than everyone acting like so insanely over the top ridiculous.
There was no sort of precedent being set for that. I hate it when people, you know, say, you know, subverting expectations and just like going ahead and doing something so blatantly ridiculous. That's not what subverting expectation is, guys. I didn't hate this episode, but I just felt it could have been done better in terms of laying the groundwork. It had two episodes to work with rather than like 22 minutes for one episode. So much more work could have just been set down, so the ending would have been ultimately satisfying, but that's just me. And by the way, Larry sucks. He really,
Larry
really sucks. Larry, I hate you. You suck. Larry, I hate your fucking guts.
I noticed that none of us brought up like the handyman who looks like Riff Raff.
Oh, yes. Fuck. That wasn't actually Richard O'Brien, though, right?
No, it wasn't.
That would have been amazing.
He literally only has, like, one line, and, like, I think you only know him most because, like, in the opening montage of, like, the Goosebumps clips, like, you just see, like, this weird guy with thick black glasses, and he just stares at Billy and is like, Neri sent me over here to get you. And you're like, I suppose he's a handyman? And then,
yeah, I'm sure he is.
The next time you see him, he's helping Uncle Al hand out crossbows to the kids to go help shoot this runaway girl from the girls' camp. And then he's finding Saber at the end. It's like, who are you, you strange man?
Who are you?
Amazing. Amazing.
Trust Bede to pick this fucking episode.
Indeed. And what's interesting to me about this episode. Yes. What's interesting to me about this episode, and we talked about this before we recorded, is that this episode, and also Say Cheese and Die, were directed by Rod Oliver, who prior to directing this episode, like he's had a career in both film and TV, but probably two of his most well-known credits are writing Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, and writing and directing Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss.
And there it is.
And he also worked on Are You Afraid of the Dark as well. So the correlation between these two series is all there. But
pretty much.
Yeah, this episode, I guess my final thoughts on it is that it's, like, I guess I'll always have a soft spot for this episode because it was the very first Goosebumps episode I saw, and also the one that, at least from what I remember, being the first one that aired in Australia. Especially for a kids horror show, like on a 6:30 on a Saturday night, at least from what I remember, because I know they kind of switch days around occasionally. Sometimes it'd be Saturday, sometimes it'd be Friday, but I just remembered like that was kind of my thing to do on Saturday night, was just making sure to get home, I mean, be at home, and so I can watch Goosebumps. So this is basically where the start of my horror education began, at least on a film and TV level. But this episode is just hilarious in for all the wrong reasons.
Yep.
And the twist end, has the most bizarre twist ending to end all bizarre twist endings.
Yep. Quite 100%.
What do you know? This other alien planet developed baseball.
I know. Yes. And so many questions, that twist. Like, do they know that all the things that happen on their planet are basically the same as is on Earth? Or do they not
see, like, the sequel? I want to see the sequel episode where they go to Earth, see that everything's just about the same as it is on their planet. We're like, well, shit, we didn't need to go through that training montage.
So there's so many questions at the end. And I need answers right now. Someone,
I demand them.
I demand them, damn it.
I don't have them for you, Bede. I'm sorry.
I know.
In the words of Val Kilmer as Bruce Wayne, just raises too many questions.
Too many questions.
But Marcy, what are your final thoughts on Welcome to Camp Nightmare?
This episode is batshit insane, and it was a fucking just... It was just fucking insane. I had fun watching it. I had so many laughs. It's definitely worth watching for just how nuts it is and that twist. Bloody hell. amazing.
What about you, Amy?
It's definitely an imperfect episode. You can poke holes in it. Just absolutely. But I do kind of think this is a rad episode overall. I think it is my favorite of the night.
And what about you, B?
Oh, Camp Nightmare. What nightmare would that be? Nah, in all honesty, it's for me, the episode is middle of the road. For all of my criticisms launched towards it, I can't come down too hard on it because, once again, this story, these books, they aren't meant for, you know, constructive thinking. You have to take them basically at face value. With the... You know, with this new insight that we have gained over time about, you know, what this, you know, the underlying themes and that sort of stuff is all about, you know, it's still just a spooky, fun horror tale for kids. And it doesn't demand a lot of its audience, not beyond anything else. And, there's no reason for me to demand anything else from it either.
Well, I guess that could be a wrap on this very special edition episode of Podcasters of Horror.
Yes.
And, a mummy wrap?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, shit.
We went there. But, Marcy, as always, thank you for always being an awesome co-host.
You damn straight.
And also for Amy and B for being really awesome guests on this episode.
Thank you.
I'm scared. but Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
They can find us in so many places that I always forget where they all are when it comes time to do this, but I'll do my best. Our base of operations is at supermarcy.com. You can find us on Facebook at two locations, with the Facebook page at facebook.com/thesupernetwork, and also with our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thesupernetworkgroup. We are also on the other socials with Twitter. You can follow the Super Network at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork, and you can follow my account at supermarcy. We are also on the Instagrams at the.super.network and TikTok under the Super Network. And you can find amazing videos that we do, as well as podcast previews and full episodes of Podcasters of Horror, at our YouTube channel. Just search the Super Network YouTube channel or look up Podcasters of Horror. And we are available on all the major podcast streaming services, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, which is the same thing, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all of those amazing things. And if I've left out anything, whoopsie daisy.
And B, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Other than lurking around the local brothel, you'll be able to spot me on the Super Network site as well as the Facebook page. I also own a personal blog site, Goodness B. You can find my link in this podcast as well. I also hang around on Twitter, so come and say hi, and I can't guarantee whether or not I'll be wearing clothes, but that's half the fun, isn't it?
It is. That's why we love you. We're like, B, she might not be wearing clothes. Let's ask her to be on the podcast.
And Amy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
Well, if for some bizarre reason you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm on there at Call Me Amy Doll, and that is Amy with an I-E.
Awesome. And if people want to...
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, you go. You go ahead.
I was going to say, and we will call you Amy Doll.
Thank you.
Sorry, me.
And if people want to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/beatjamite. On my personal writer's page on Facebook at facebook.com/terribleaussie. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com with both reviews and columns. So, that's a wrap on this special episode of Podcasters of Horror. We hope all of our listeners enjoyed it. And we'll see you all next time. See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link get.surfshark.net/SHR0 to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy Shark doo 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 doo. Surfy Shark doo 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 doo.
And now back to the show.
You're in for a scare.